Netherlands Worldwide presents Radiobooks, a series of contemporary Dutch and Flemish short stories in English translation.
Hello and welcome. I'm David Swatling. Our new season of Radio Books highlights work from the diverse immigrant community of the Netherlands and Belgium. As I mentioned early in the first season of Radio Books, when we featured a story by Iraqi-born author Al Galidi, the definition of a Dutch artist rather broadly includes almost anyone living and working in the Netherlands. So with a growing interest in all things multicultural, this season we'll be hearing stories by writers born or with family roots in Morocco, Turkey, Suriname, Iran, Pakistan, Estonia, and the Basque region of Spain. Of course, we won't be ignoring Dutch and Flemish authors, but it'll be very interesting to compare and contrast the styles, subjects, and approaches of the, shall we say, native versus non-native Dutch literati. Which is exactly why we'll begin with a story by an author whose latest book, Dunderpreken, or Rant, directly addresses issues of multiculturalism in the Netherlands. Sevtap Baysili was born in Turkey in 1968 and studied philosophy at the University of Istanbul. Her specialization earned her the nickname Miss Wittgenstein. She emigrated to the Netherlands in 1991. A serious and good philosophical work could be written consisting entirely of jokes, wrote Ludwig Wittgenstein, and Baysili's 1999 work De Nachtmerrie van de Allochtone, or The Nightmare of the Immigrant, takes its cue from the Austrian philosopher. It's a satiric black comedy written in the form of a pseudo-scholarly treatise on how the native and non-native Dutch get along. She also writes an internet column called Chicken and Egg Without a Head. Baysili's philosophical approach is well illustrated in her contribution to Radio Books. She reflects on mortality and her relationship with her mother as they both grow older, gracefully or not. Here's No Age by Sevtap Baysili. It's read by Jackie Spears.
The older you get, the more you realize it isn't everyone's lot to grow old pleasantly. Some do it better than others. Some take it for granted. They reach a respectable age without much trouble. They become a dear grandma or grandpa, unembittered, hopeful and with no problems, simply happy and contented. Others don't even get the chance to grow old. And sometimes people make a mess of it. They don't appreciate the years they've been granted, don't appreciate the marks life has left on their souls and on their bodies. Look, these people, they hate aging. They want what people call perpetual youth. No, no one is perpetually young. Take my mother. It never occurred to her she'd get old. That's how she lived. She thought her beauty and youth were permanent. And until recently, she saw nothing in the mirror to contradict this superstition. You can live your whole life, she often said, without getting old. She's now 70, or she'll be 70 this year, I'm not sure. But she is, as I just said, a woman who is perpetually young. And that's also the way she thinks. She has the self-image of a young woman. This is, I think, a marvellous, glorious form of self-deception. She never really saw that, just like everyone else, she was also getting old. Until she was about 50, she hadn't a line on her face. No wisdom in her head either, I might add, which you would expect of a woman of her age. She was an imaginative, cheerful woman who saw herself through the windows of her own dream world and therefore suffered from an extremely favourable form of colour blindness. She was and is blind to grey and drab. When people met us, they used to think she was my older sister. I really liked it too. Yes, mentally she was always incredibly young. In our family, this is something that isn't appreciated at all. What am I saying? Not appreciated? No, that denies the true extent of the negativity towards it in our family. If I'm honest, I'd have to say that with us, thinking like a young woman is seen as disgraceful. And that's not because with us the men dominate and forbid the women to be women and to think in this way. On the contrary, men don't have much say about the way we are. We're free, because with us the men are brought up almost like girls. Like girls, but also, of course, according to Turkish standards, and that's macho enough in Dutch terms even for a boy. This makes our boys truly man enough for the European market, the same as our girls. Yes, so my mother had the same upbringing as her brother. My poor uncle is not alive anymore. A fatiha for his soul, please. But anyway, no one knows what happened to my mother's upbringing because she never became wise. She felt young, always in her 20s. In fact, young and fruity, and that already makes her a few years younger than me. Which means it still feels like she's younger than me. Since May the 14th, 1996, I've actually felt older than my mother. It was then I accidentally overheard a private conversation between her and her boyfriend at the time. I didn't even know she had a boyfriend. She didn't want to upset me, she said, by discussing her successful love life with me, because then, and perhaps still now, in that area I was extremely inept. I heard her breaking off with him, a retired dentist, she later told me, on the phone. Because, by my own judgment, I was much too surprised by what I heard, and because I couldn't really believe what I was hearing, I've never forgotten that day. It was the day I got to know myself. Yes, until then, I'd seen myself as a feminist, an individualist, someone with an open outlook who firmly believed in individual freedom. But in fact, I was a feeble feminist, a conservative old lady. I hadn't known up to then that I was prejudiced about age. On that day, I saw I was actually older than my mother. My mother was brief and to the point with her boyfriend, poor man, with his heart in the right place, a Santa Claus of a dentist I later saw in a photo, but at the same time she was elegant and in an odd way reassuringly calm. The way she rejected him precisely, without moaning or complaining, yes, the way she terminated the relationship in that calm style, without breaking his heart or hurting his pride, at the time it was obviously a way I only expected from a woman who had options when it came to male company, a woman who had no difficulty in getting a boyfriend. What's more, in fact, it was the calm but also mischievous style of a woman who, even before she ends the fairy tale with her current prince, already has the next victim of her romantic designs in her handbag. What a revelation it was to me. I suddenly knew the truth about my sex, and about my mother, of course. My mother was a young woman who didn't necessarily have to cling on to a man, because she was able to arrange another man for herself if she felt like it. She had a choice, and she wasn't in a hurry. Since then, my mother has been younger than me in that sense. She knows it, and I know it. Compared to her, I'm a washout of a woman. Not just me, but the entire generation of women, of which I'm an accurate example. I still don't know why my generation is in such a hurry. We live in a hurry, and we burn out quickly for our age. We're much too old, too grey, and mentally drab. But anyway, I say my mother's disgracefully young because she can't see yet that just like everyone else, she's getting old. Perhaps that's why she now doesn't really see she's not ill. At the age of 70, suddenly she's ill. Yes, for my mother, aging is a medical condition, an unnatural condition, something that has to be treated by doctors with drugs. This isn't a joke. As a person, she's healthy for her age, but she won't accept it, because she can't accept her age. That's why I think it isn't everyone's lot to grow old pleasantly. Aging, learning not to be young anymore, is a time-consuming and mentally exhausting process. Growing old slowly but graciously and at the same time avoiding any unnecessary damage, any irreparable character disfigurement during the process is, in fact, an art for which you perhaps need an innate talent. Growing old and grey can in itself be extremely annoying, as my mother experiences it. But the fact that the end of the process can never be predicted makes it especially difficult, I think. I mean, you don't really know what kind of old person you're going to be. For a man, it doesn't matter much, after all. There's not much difference between a dirty old man and an energetic over 60. Passion doesn't simply have to disappear. I mean, you never know. You don't know what kind of person you'll be in the final phase of your life. However warm the summer has been or beautiful the autumn, it says nothing about how cold the winter's going to be and how long it'll last. You can never tell beforehand. You've also no idea what the future's going to do to your blood and flesh. I mean, before you know it, you've become someone different, someone you've never known, unrecognizably old. That's not something anyone looks forward to. Certainly not my mother. Who wants to be an annoying old person, a burden to the people around him or her, in short, a bloody old codger? Yes. The future can also play dirty tricks on your mind. In your youth, for instance, you can be the most promising of them all, but still, when you reach that respectable age, you might be seen as the rottenest apple of your generation. What you can also become is the dangerous grandpa or ailing great-grandmother of a group of remarkable people whose names you can't even remember. That's painful, isn't it? And also disappointing. In this respect, I can quite understand my mother's denial of her age. The way she constantly talks about her illnesses these days makes me worry about my own old age. After all, I'm part of a generation that's become ill at a much younger age. Burnout, that's what they call it with us. We live and think like young girls for too long, and then we're completely burnt out by the time we reach my mother's mental age. She's truly in her 30s, by the way. I mean, she's much younger than me for her age. Yes, how bad can it get for us? That's what I think about. I wonder if I'm the same. How old am I, actually? And how does that feel in reality? Whoever you used to be, it's no longer relevant. Know yourself, know who you are, know your place. These pieces of wisdom don't apply anymore. As a convinced socialist, you can supposedly waste your life on the weak in society and still end up as a socialist demented in your last years and mentally paralyzed. Watch your own hands betraying you politically by voting for some Christian Democrat like Balkenende, for example. Why? Because you allow yourself to be frightened about your pension and because you're afraid of taxes. Why? Because you're hopelessly old, tired, disappointed, embittered. Because however you look at life, you've always got one foot in the grave. Whether it's your left leg or your right leg is no longer relevant. So, I'm not worried about dying when I almost anxiously count the years I've left behind me, because that's not where my fears lie. Because dying is something we all do, let's be honest. It doesn't matter how you actually die. After you've got over the most important moment of your life, I mean, finally crossed the river, died, it doesn't matter if the sheets under your dried out, wrinkled, nauseating body have just been changed, fresh and clean-smelling, sleep-inducingly aerial clean. However clean they are, the sheets under your aged body can never be death-proof, can they? There's actually nothing else you need to know at the moment of your personal doom. Believe me, it doesn't matter if the bedding was dirty, wet-cold and stinking of urine, which usually seems to be the case. And it really makes no difference if you were comfortable on your deathbed, if you very quietly and calmly took your time to meet death without undue pain, if on this, the most important day of your life, on your deathbed, you tried in vain for hours to sit up a little, reaching with your right hand for the glass of water on the bedside table, with your dry mouth and cracked lips, lips that would do anything for a few last sips of water. The water that was as tired and old as you, but stood there all day without moving, unfortunately placed just too far behind the holy book by your spiritual carer, who happened to forget to take it with him, or actually left it there on purpose, mercifully to give you a last chance of heaven and peace. It doesn't matter that it meant your final deed on earth was to curse the holy book, because it was in an awkward place on your bedside table. it really doesn't matter. Whether you said nothing or did nothing, whether you had enough water, whether you died on a dull, dreadful pajama day, or whether you were sitting at a richly laden table, cheerfully celebrating Christmas with the whole family. After death, it's also not really relevant if, unfortunately, just before you died, you were doing something quite different from dying, occupied with something seriously and with the utmost concentration. For example, cutting your toenails. Click, 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 and so on. Not knowing how weak you are in life at that moment, going on until the moment you die. Click, click, and a double click, you're deleted. Or perhaps you're surrounded by people with warm hearts that go out to you, people who love you and whom you love, people you've brought up, perhaps given birth to, enriched their entire lives. Will you manage to say something beautiful? Something meaningful, something poetic perhaps, something original? Or will they have to make do with a quote from a bestseller because you can't think of anything better at the time? Will you manage to say something that's of any use to them, the people who lovingly and gratefully embrace you and who don't want to let you die? The last poem of your completed life, the very last words before you depart, were they understandable? Or did they sound like random words from an everyday shopping list? Teary eyes, tea, rice, all my love, wholemeal loaf, don't forget me, don't forget meat, be kind to mother, bacon, tomato. None of this is relevant anymore after the moment has passed. Whether you were able to say anything exciting, whether you had a terrible secret to reveal, whether you're leaving anything of any value or unmanageable debts, whether you had any children, what you actually die of, and especially where you're going to be buried and who's coming to the funeral, none of this is really relevant after death. That's why I say to my mother, don't worry, you're not ill. That's why it's an art to live consciously, or perhaps unconsciously, at a fast pace of your own choosing, and lose yourself more and more often, as my mother did so excellently, so you don't really notice what you've been doing all that time. We all have a single occupation, getting old. In comparison, dying is just a troublesome little ailment. Organize it so your old age happens to you suddenly, like an illness, something you didn't see coming, while ultimately it happens to everyone. Perhaps getting old is pleasant after all. Like everyone, you notice the years are going by faster and the days are growing shorter. A month doesn't last much longer than a week. I mean, the way it feels. You consume hours as if they're simply minutes. Because you feel like time is speeding up. Because you move more and more slowly, think more and more sluggishly, as if the earth is turning faster and faster on its axis. And the sun waits, sometimes moves faster, adapts to your behavior, and does its best to speed up. And everything becomes relative. Everything becomes subjective. You become increasingly central to your own life, although you feel you've become more selfless and self-effacing. It is indeed an art not to think constantly about your own death, while you're so busy getting old and therefore dying, because there's no opportunity to practice first. Suddenly you're old, a bit lame, a bit blind, and also a bit stupid. An old person who's half dead and half alive and kicking. Like my mother now, wrinkled and tired and suffering from 100 different ailments, but she won't die so easily. Poor mother. Poor child. Last year she was still much younger than me. And now, now she has no age anymore.
No Age by Sevtap Baisili was translated by Michael Blass and read by Jackie Spears. The improvisational musical accompaniment was by Turkish bass clarinetist Oğuz Büyükberber, recorded during a special concert by international students from the Amsterdam Conservatorium. I'm David Swatling, and I hope you'll join us again for another in our series, Radio Books.
We're always interested to hear what you think, and you can let us know by dropping us a line at letters@rnw.nl. You can also write to us at Radio Books, Radio Netherlands Worldwide, the English Department, P.O. Box 222, 1200 J.G. Hilversum, the Netherlands. To listen to other short stories in our radio book series, visit our website, radionetherlands.nl. Radio Books is produced in association with the Flemish Dutch House de Buren in Brussels and the Flemish broadcaster Clara. Radio Books is a presentation of Radio Netherlands Worldwide.